This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. And this is a listener to our program named Alex Bradykamp.
It's some stupid meme on the internet. And it says, you're almost 22. You should have learned about taxes in high school. And the response is, first of all, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. And that just like cracked me up because it's true. We learn about mitochondria and like cells, which personally I don't use in my professional work, but I'm definitely interested in being financially stable.
Alex makes a good point. No disrespect to biology teachers and the magic of mitochondria, but we should talk more about financial literacy, particularly about why most high schools, public and private, do not teach it. And a bunch of you agreed that this is a really important topic. According to data from the group Next Gen Personal Finance, less than 16% of U.S. students are required to take a personal finance course to graduate high school. The Federal Reserve finds that student loan borrowers in the U.S. collectively owe $1.5 trillion as of last March. So, as part of this week of listener-selected topics, let's discuss how we're preparing our young people to be smart consumers. Or perhaps how we're not. And we'll consider why financial literacy is not more standard in our schools. Joining us in studio is Laura Levine, the president and CEO of the Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy. That's a nonprofit advancing financial literacy in K-12 schools in the U.S. Laura, welcome to 1A.
Thank you, Joshua. It's a pleasure to be here.
Joining us from Vermont Public Radio is John Pelletier, the director and founder of the Center for Financial Literacy at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont. John, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Joshua, for having me on the program.
And joining us from Palo Alto, California is Jessica Endlich, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Next Gen Personal Finance. The group develops free financial curricula. Jessica, thanks for making time for us.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
We'd also love to know who taught you the most about personal finance, how you figured out things like budgeting and saving, and what difference it might have made for you specifically if it had been a part of your high school experience, the same way that social studies or English or calculus were. Email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Jessica, let me start with you. Let's take a stab at answering Alex's question. Why is it that high schools don't really talk about financial literacy as part of the curriculum? Can you paint us a picture of what high schools are doing right now? Like, what's the landscape look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got high schools where personal finance education is just not happening at all. And then a really popular model would be that schools are saying, hey, we've got this. We embed some learning about money in our math classes, or we've got an economics class, and there's a little two-week unit on personal finance embedded right in there. So that's where kids get it. Then you've also got schools where locally they've decided, okay, personal finance education is important enough that we are going to either offer an elective or a required class for graduation. So it kind of runs the gamut, but I think in far, far too many schools, they're going this route of like, of course it's embedded in there. It's such an important topic. We're hitting it from all angles. And there's really no accountability to say that, yes, that's actually happening.
John Pelletier, when it comes to financial literacy in high schools, it really varies a lot from state to state. How do you see which ones are doing well and which ones need to do better?
Well, there are a variety of models. My favorite model is a state like Utah. There's about five states, there'll be a sixth joining with the recent law change that literally require every student as a graduation requirement to take a standalone course in personal finance. And that's pretty substantive because that's a half a year and that's 60 hours of instruction approximately in personal finance. Other states, as Jessica pointed out, might have a course that's required for graduation, like economics, and they put a portion of it. And boy, does that vary from state to state, that out of a 60-hour course, as little as 7 hours might be allocated to personal finance and as much as nearly 40 of a 60-hour course. And then there are other states where standards have been adopted by the state, but it's really up to every school district to figure out how to implement it, whether to put it into other existing courses like mathematics, hypothetically, or something of that nature. And frankly, the equivalent of the agency of education of the state isn't really monitoring if this is being done.
Laura, I wonder how you would characterize this, particularly because there are outside groups like Jumpstart, like NextGen, who help with this kind of education. And Sue in St. Louis reminded us of another one that I remember being active with when I was young. Sue emailed, "Please remind your audience that Junior Achievement has been educating students about financial literacy for 100 years. Junior Achievement of Greater St. Louis reached over 166,000 students last year, kindergarten through 12th grades, and in-school programs are free of charge to schools." Well, bully for Junior Achievement. I mean, Junior Achievement helped me when I was little. I'm sure Jumpstart and NextGen are helping young people as well. But I wonder if that makes some schools feel like, oh, there's these outside groups. Pressure is taken off. Problem solved. We don't need to put it in our curriculum now.
Well, you know, I think the financial literacy issue is very big, and it's a very big country. And to reach all the kids, to get financial education to everyone, it's going to take a lot of us helping out. And so my organization, the Jumpstart Coalition, is a coalition of these many organizations that are working to help improve financial literacy among students, both as outside and, very importantly, within schools. And so these are programs like NextGen, for example, that support teachers and classrooms and schools and school districts in implementing financial education there.
Before we hear more about NextGen and the Center for Financial Literacy, I should remind you we are speaking to Laura Levine, the president and CEO of the Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy, John Pelletier, the director of the Center for Financial Literacy at Champlain College in Vermont, and Jessica Enlich, the co-founder and chief operating officer of NextGen Personal Finance. Glad to get some of your stories about how learning about personal finance has affected you, especially in light of what's going on in this country right now. Gricology emailed, "I went to a public high school in Tennessee at a time when the state required students to take a personal finance course in order to graduate. This was the only formal education in financial literacy that I've ever had. As a federal employee who is currently furloughed, I can say that course helped prepare me extensively for this shutdown, and that I have the savings and investments to comfortably continue paying my expenses for a few more weeks, though I didn't plan for it to last more than 2 months. Financial literacy education matters. Thank you for sharing your story. I am so sorry you have to burn your savings on this, but good thing you had it. We welcome more of your stories as well, 1A@WAMU.org. We heard from quite a few of you about how and where you learned to manage your finances. Here's what some of you left in our inbox.
My name is Jules. I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri. I'd say financial literacy wasn't something that I learned from my parents. It was more just through observing them, growing up poor and watching my dad pinch pennies and experiencing frugality as a child has really like informed all of my decisions and helped me become financially stable today.
My name is Alejandro, and I am calling from Rockville, Maryland. When I had just turned 19 years old, I made a very rash decision, and I bought a brand new car that by no means could I afford. At the time, I was going to school full-time and working part-time. And after that, I had to shape up really quickly, continue going to school full time, because as always, that was the priority. I picked up more hours and started picking up skills to earn more money.
Hi, I'm Jonathan from Fort Collins, Colorado. I am calling about the way I was taught to save, which was pretty much not at all, unfortunately. I didn't really learn anything about money. And as a result, it made my life rather difficult. It's really difficult to save when you are living on a pretty small income. And even when my income was greater, I just never saved. I never even thought of the concept, and I didn't do it, and I regret it looking back. As a matter of fact, I think when I made more money, I got into more debt. And I think that teaching our kids how to save is incredibly important.
Thank you all very much for sharing your stories with us. And Jessica, I imagine that NextGen is aimed at addressing some of the kind of haphazard, ad hoc way that some of us learn how to deal with money.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. So many people's stories hinge on the fact that they made a minor to very major mistake and then learned personal finance sort of retroactively. And there's no reason that that has to happen, right? Like, we could be teaching teenagers what they need to know so that, you know, when you're thinking about a new car, you're like, hey, let me figure out what the monthly payments are going to be ahead of time. Whoa, that was unexpected. Like, that's a bad decision. I'm not even going to make it. Yeah, I think there's just there's no reason for people to have to make the mistakes in order to learn the lessons. And I think we also heard from a caller that watching her parents and learning from her parents really, really helped. And I think that's phenomenal. But I don't think it's okay to let it be dependent on whether your parents are modeling good skills or whether your parents take the time or have the time to teach you about personal finance, to that can't be the model we use. Like, oh, certainly kids are going to learn this at home.
Right.
We shouldn't waste time at school on it.
And I think sometimes it can be hard for parents, especially if parents did not do well with their money, to talk about their mistakes with their kids. John, I want to get into that a little bit more when we continue with Jessica Enlich, John Pelletier, and Laura Levine. We'll get to more of your stories as well. Liz in New Hampshire tweeted, personal finance classes, sure, a required prerequisite, civics. A to the men, Liz. I am all for that. We'll get to more of your thoughts in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you are deeply invested in 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing financial literacy, why it's not taught in many high school curricula, and what could change for consumers and for the economy if it was. This is a topic that a listener suggested, part of our week of listener-suggested programs. We're speaking to Jessica Enlich, the co-founder and COO of NextGen Personal Finance, John Pelletier, director of the Center for Financial Literacy at Champlain College in Vermont, and Laura Levine, president of the Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy. We'd love to hear from you, too, especially if you are in school right now. If you're a student, what are you learning about personal finance right now? Are you learning anything about personal finance? What's the curriculum like? Maybe you are an educator and you would like to teach personal finance, but you're not sure how to fit it in. What is getting in the way of you being able to impart this to your students? Or perhaps you found a way around it as a student or a teacher or an administrator or a school board official. What are you doing? Or as a lawmaker, what are you doing to try to infuse this into the curricula? And how can you tell if it's working? Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Before I get to some more of your comments, John Pelletier, let me bring you back in. I mentioned earlier that parents are a big factor in this. I wonder how you see the parental aspect of this, particularly for parents who did not do well with their finances and feel maybe intimidated to even talk finance with their kids at all, lest their kids should raise uncomfortable questions.
Well, I would suggest that parents do the opposite, which is to talk to them and don't be afraid to explain their mistakes. That's how we all learn. We learn from mistakes, and your kids could learn an awful lot. There's a giant national survey that's done by the FINRA Investor Education Foundation, about nearly 30,000 adults across all 50 states. And one of the questions they asked, that's my favorite, they asked, look, were you offered and did you participate in financial education in K through 12 schools? If you went to post-secondary degree institutions like college there or in the workforce? And nationally, just under 21% of adults said, yeah, I was offered and I took something. So that means that 4 out of 5 adults are learning this either through their parents, through their friends, through internet searches, but probably just from making mistakes. You know, one of your listeners who called in about buying that automobile, the new automobile, those are the mistakes we all make.
Right.
And we could make a lot less of these if we figure out a way to educate people, not just the good habits. But, you know, teaching people about mistakes is a good thing, too.
Laura?
Well, sure. Thank you. And I think that, there's been research that shows the impact of parents. The A-plus research out of the University of Arizona, for example, shows that parental influence is even more important than education in terms of the financial behaviors of consumers as young adults. But we know that not all parents can or will be their own kids' best guides. And so getting financial education into schools is so important because it helps us level the playing field. It helps us reach everybody, or certainly theoretically everybody. And I think that the other role that's so important for parents is, because I hear from parents all the time who say, well, I'm not an expert and I can't teach my own kids enough about finance. Well, parents can use their voice. And what my organization is doing is we have launched a project called Project Groundswell, and we're about to launch a campaign early next month to get parents engaged in starting this conversation at their own kids' schools. So if you're not an expert, then you can still help your kids by talking to their schools, talking to the school districts. Let's get the conversation started.
There's kind of no way, Laura, around this, it would seem, because, you know, you are, as a parent, you are your kid's number one role model, good, bad, or otherwise. So what you do and say, they're going to absorb one way or the other. So you kind of have no choice but to play an active role in all of this.
Absolutely. And I think that it's a mistake to pit financial education at home against financial education at school or any place else, and that really, optimally, it's all of them. It's all working together. It is in school, standards-based education, and then at home, that guidance that parents give the best.
So you get it at home from your parents. Ideally, you'd be getting it at school, and it would be reinforced there. And Jessica Endlich, this sounds like a chance to talk about a little bit of what NextGen does, because among other things, you're working to help with curricula, educating teachers. To that end, I wonder if you can respond to a comment from James. He's listening in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And James emailed, please ask the guests to tell us exactly what should be taught regarding financial decision making. Is it about how to open a bank account? Is it how to pay bills? How to understand loans? What topics would they teach? And how do people become certified to teach financial literacy in high school? Are teachers trained to do this? Jessica, let's break this into pieces. First of all, what should be taught regarding financial decision making? What's on the list?
So I would say that everything that the caller listed should be taught in personal finance. And that's why we feel so passionately that a standalone required personal finance course for a whole semester is the way to go, because you really need those foundational things like having a checking and savings account and understanding how they work and how you can utilize the two together. You need those foundations. But then the real way that you are going to build wealth as an individual and is to set yourself up for a successful adulthood and parenthood, if you choose to, and retirement eventually, is through investing. And so you need that whole spectrum. The other major thing, as you mentioned, with $1.5 trillion in student loans, you really need to understand how credit and debt work, and the magic and pain of compounding. All of those things work together to help paint this full picture of what a successful financial life can be. And that's why, like, this idea of like, oh, let's squeeze it in different places. Like, no, let's devote an entire semester so that you get that breadth as well as depth and have the content knowledge you need for all of the decisions you need to make.
John, how are you seeing the standards from state to state evolve? Your report cards on how different states are doing have had some effects on changes to state laws in Massachusetts, in Louisiana. Are you seeing any trends in terms of what states are beginning to require more broadly?
Well, you know, they all require those that require a standalone personal finance course have incredibly substantive standards, and the rest of the states they're either pretty robust or sometimes pretty modest. So it really runs the gamut. Sometimes it's clearly required and there's a designated course. Other times it's really left up to local control to figure out how to bring it in, if frankly, at all. But the big trend, just since our last report came out in December 2017, with data as of November 2017, I don't recall over the last 14 months as many states moving in a positive direction as has occurred over the past 14-month period. So something positive is happening. You know, states like Wisconsin and Delaware, Vermont, Kentucky, Louisiana, Iowa, and Massachusetts have all made pretty substantive changes at the high school level, and that's great. But one of the points you made in your question to Jessica is you've got to do two things here, and your listener made that point as well. It's not just enough to require it. We got to make sure the teachers can teach it, because they're adults, right? And if only one out of five adults has been offered and participated in personal finance, that includes teachers, people.
Yeah.
And so we've got to make sure they can teach this. Because otherwise, it's no different than a parent saying, gee, I'd like to teach it, but I don't know what to teach.
Yeah, Laura, I know your organization publishes standards as well, and that also gets to James's question in terms of, and also what John was just saying, how do we know that the teachers are equipped to teach this themselves?
Right. And I think that maybe this is one thing that certainly John's organization, Jessica's, and ours are working to not only increase the amount of financial education, but improve the amount of financial education and the effectiveness of what's being taught. And one of the ways we do this is through standards. So my organization publishes national standards. Many of the states that have adopted standards are based on these national standards. And then the national standards also serve as a guide for the curriculum developers, the resource providers, and the resource creators to develop materials that are substantive and are covering all of the areas of finance that we want students to know.
Let me get to a few more of your comments as we continue our conversation with Laura Levine, John Pelletier, and Jessica Enlich. Patrick is in South Carolina. Patrick tweeted, "Growing up in a poor community where few people have financial literacy, I felt doomed from the start. At no point during my school years did I learn financial management. I didn't even know what a credit score was until my 20s. I'm 30 now. It should be taught." Cassava tweeted, "Just went to my son's incoming ninth grade curriculum night last evening. Financial math has recently been added. It may not be a hard requirement for graduation, but it will be mandatory in our family if our kids plan to access their college funds." Dana emailed, "My son's high school in Norman, Oklahoma, requires a unit of personal financial literacy. Although I am in support of teaching that to high school students, the information they present is difficult for young people to absorb without any context. I think it should wait until they are seniors or have some kind of a job and context for money management." Jessica, what about that? Is there an appropriate age or stage of young development where personal financial literacy makes the most sense?
Ooh, good question. I mean, I on one hand, I would say you are never too young to learn about it. I've got a 4-year-old and she's learning it right now. But at the same time, I hear what they're saying, that sort of older students do have the personal experience. They've gotten the paycheck and said, like, whoa, where did all this money go? Like, what is this tax thing that's going on my pay stub? And they might be chipping in for gas or paying parts of their insurance for their car or what, you know, the decision making can be more personal if you aim for like 11th or 12th graders. But at the same time, a big portion of what we do is write curriculum and resources and materials for teachers to use in their classroom. And we are frankly really, really good at writing those resources, such that even if you haven't had the personal experience, we've written a scenario or a really teen relevant situation where there is no clear right or wrong answer. There's a lot of factors that need to be put in. And I think if teachers or curriculum developers or whoever's writing the lesson plans knows this challenge of making it relevant to high school students, it's something that can be overcome and make it personalized for them.
I also remember that Disney came out with a cartoon years ago called Scrooge McDuck and Money. Came out in the late... Has anyone seen this but me? It's Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and they go to Scrooge, their Uncle Scrooge McDuck, and they've got $1.95, and he charges them 3 cents to invest that $1.95, and they teach them as little kids, like, about how investing works and why it's worth it to put money in and wait for the money to grow. So, you know, it seems like there are ways to do this for kids of all ages. Alex, the person who recommended today's show, had some tips about things that she wished she had been taught. Here is a little more of what Alex put in our inbox.
So I feel like there are just a couple pretty basic tools that can be taught that can really help a young person be off on the right foot. You know, for instance, why it is so important to pay your credit card bill in full every month. Just the balance plus, you know, whatever interest rate is on your balance can just crush you. Why it's so important to start saving as early as possible, even if it's just a little bit. Young people maybe don't really understand how powerful compounding interest can be, or have heard parents talk about pension plans that, as far as I know, don't really exist anymore. You know, if someone wants to start investing and they have no idea what they're doing, you know, they should be putting their money in a no-load index fund, or they should be doing some research about their employer's retirement plan and be contributing to that.
Yeah, Alex, thank you for sharing more of your thoughts with us. Jessica, let me stick with you for just 1 second, because I wonder also how you design these curricula to be engaging. I mean, I understand the value of mixing it into a math class, but that requires you to stay awake during math. And not everybody can do that. I mean, I heard some of the things Alex said, like compounding interest, pension funds, pension plans, index. I'm already gone if I'm a high schooler who would rather be on Instagram than listening to you. How do we design this course in adulting to be something that actually sticks?
I mean, I think you you hit the nail on the head that if what the students in the classroom are doing are, quote, listening to you, the teacher, yeah, they're probably going to be bored. We feel really strongly that personal finance is not a course that should be taught from a lecture-based standpoint. It's not about memorizing terms or hearing historically what has happened. It's really about being engaged in the decision-making. And one of the things that we've seen a lot of success with is we've, on our website, got an interactive library, some of which are things that we've found online, like calculators or moving maps or all kinds of like little quizzes and things like that, but then some that we've developed ourselves that are sort of decision-making role-play games. One is called Payback. It's about the college decision-making process of where you'll go to college.
I tried Payback. Payback is very cool.
Oh, tell me.
Yeah, Payback is very cool.
Yeah, it's a really good one for getting kids to think about, like, wow, is that college debt going to be worth it in the future I see for myself? And then another big one that we've released recently is Stacks, which is a 20-minute fast-paced investing game. And things like that hook the students in, and then when you're teaching them kind of the what goes behind it, again, having them do things rather than listen to you is crucial.
I know we have to pause in a moment, but Laura, I'd love you to chime in on this. I kind of wish that they had taught a class in what I call, you know, what I learned to think for myself as economic slavery. Because the minute I got yep. to college with my college loans and my credit cards, I was immediately chained to an economic system I could not control and have only just started in the last few years to break myself away from. Like, I wish someone had just shaken me and said, no, this is about your freedom as an adult.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you're talking about people snoozing off in math class. Kids like money. They want money. They want to know about money. Money is a great way of bringing mathematics, economics, a lot of other topics to life for them. So rather than seeing it as, you know, how do we keep them up to learn about money, I think teaching them about money will keep them awake to learn the other subjects.
And if you're the kind of kid who wants to look like a grown-up,
absolutely.
Being able to control your money is an easy way to look like a grown-up. Polly emailed, as your show is pointing out, financial literacy is extremely important, but I wonder what a school district gives up to teach this. Particularly in public education, the requirements are extensive, and the school day is only so long. If this is to be a requirement, then what goes by the wayside? John, I'd love you to take a stab at this when we continue our conversation, and maybe we'll play a little bit of Payback. See how I do with my money these days. Stay close.
Cash moves everything around me. Bring it the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash moves everything around me. Bring it the money. Dollar, dollar bill.
We will continue in just a moment after a quick heads up about tomorrow's listener-suggested program. The power of influence groups and lobbyists is a hot topic for people across the political spectrum, and few groups inspire such strong feelings as ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. ALEC has succeeded in getting a number of state laws passed that benefit big businesses. If you have ever interacted with ALEC on any side of any issue, what was that like? How did you encounter the group? What impact did it have? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. We would also love to hear from you if you do work or have worked for ALEC. And we know you may need to remain somewhat anonymous to contact us, but please do share your story, 855-236-1A1A. 1A1A. You can also use our app, 1A Vox Pop, to send us a radio quality audio file and to keep up to date on future topics. You'll find 1A Vox Pop, VOXPOP, in the App Store. And we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Back now to our conversation with John Pelletier, Laura Levine, and Jessica Enlich. Let's get to some more of your questions and comments. And thank you for sharing so many of them. I think we're all kind of unanimous that we want our kids to not be broke. So that is great. And it's great to hear how some of you are going about teaching your kids to manage your money. Danielle is in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. Danielle tweeted, "Great to hear a show on teaching financial literacy. My husband is a researcher on how people save for education. In our family, we've started early, teaching our kids about the importance of saving and being a smart consumer, what you need versus what you want." Jenny is in DC. Jenny tweeted, "Financial literacy is a marathon, not a sprint. Each time I lead a personal finance workshop, I give attendees homework to read 3 money-themed books in the next year." Polly emailed, "As your show is pointing out, financial literacy is extremely important, but I wonder what a school district gives up to teach this." And John, I'd love for you to respond to Polly. "Particularly in public education, the requirements are extensive, and the school day is only so long. If this is to be a requirement, then what goes by the wayside?" John, how have different states answered this question?
Well, you know, it's usually you have plenty of credit hours or units. You know, they have different names for it in different states. But if you add another requirement, that the reality is what you're taking away is probably an elective, right? That a student would take. And you know, one principal who I talked to who was reluctant to require a personal finance as a graduation requirement said, "Look, John, here's the way it really works. If I add this, then there's going to be less electives that students will be able to take. And if an elective can't get enough students in it, we'll cancel it." And sadly, that elective might be the favorite course that an educator teaches. So I haven't seen it as a real excuse for preventing things moving forward. It would mean we have less electives in high schools.
What about the way, John, that these courses are designed or what they're called? You heard me ask Jessica about making the courses engaging. I'm wondering how imaginative educators and lawmakers are in terms of the way that they structure these. I mean, I could understand rolling my eyes at a class on personal finance. I would definitely take a course called Wealth. If that was the requirement, I would take that all for – I would take Wealth 401 by the time that I was done with high school. How are they structuring these courses state to state?
You know, they're usually using a term like personal finance. Usually, as Laura was saying, it's the state will mandate standards, and it's really up to the local schools to define what the course is called in their course catalog. So there are some clever names like the Wealth, but that would be done at the local high school level. That wouldn't be done at the state level.
I'm 38 years old. I'd take a course in Wealth right now.
Absolutely.
I would be all about it. Another one of our listeners writes, I'm in my 70s, and we never thought to have financial talks with your kids. My children are doing a much better job explaining to their kids that they're saving for college and that if they want special things, they need to save their money. One of them gives allowances that come with the offer that if they don't take it, the parent will put it into an account to save it with interest. So save and get more. They sometimes take it, but as they've grown older and understand money better, they are more often saving it. A great lesson. Laura, I wonder if you could answer a question from John, who's listening in Louisville. John tweeted, are the banks and credit card companies against teaching kids about financial literacy in the schools?
Oh, no, they are not against it at all. And one of the things is, as part of the Jumpstart Coalition, we have organizations from that are financial institutions, government agencies, nonprofits, academic institutions. We have many financial industry participants that are huge supporters of financial education. And before, some listeners jump to the conclusion that it is only so that they can sell more of their product or more of their services.
I was just going to ask you about that, yeah.
We have many of our partners support, for example, our teacher conference, and they are sponsors where they're not directly telling their message. And also the curricula that a lot of these financial institutions support or create themselves are standards-based. So they're not allowed to weave in, but you have to open an account with us. And so by and large, the financial industry is doing a really good job at helping us help teachers and help families with financial education.
Yeah, Laura, I imagine there's a little bit of firewalling that has to kind of go on. I mean, I got my first bank account when I was 14 years old at what was First Union Bank and then got acquired by Wachovia Bank and then got acquired by Wells Fargo. And I still have that exact same Wells Fargo account. But I imagine you have to do a little bit of firewalling to make sure that this isn't just an easy conduit to young consumers.
Right. And we do. And so one of the things that the Jumpstart Coalition does is we have an online clearinghouse of financial education resources. And it includes tons and tons of the next gen stuff. It includes financial education resources from government, from banks, from pretty much everyone. But what we do is we review these materials and we don't list them if they are marketing materials in disguise or if they have an ulterior motive, so to speak. And so in that way, we can improve upon an internet search by saying if you search the clearinghouse, we can tell parents and teachers that the materials here have been checked. And are good to use.
And I imagine one of the benefits of doing this is that if you are a financially literate young person and you get one of these materials, you'll be able to tell when they're just trying to market to you. And even if they are, marketing is not a crime. At least you'll be able to suss out what they're saying and decide if it's right for you or not.
Absolutely. I think one of the most important things about financial literacy, and Jessica mentioned this, it's not just about memorizing facts and figures. It's about understanding how to make decisions and understanding how to use information to manage your own money.
We know that there are a lot of you who are looking for different ways to go about that and expand financial literacy. Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live had a little bit of fun with this in a sketch that was about teaching young kids about financial concepts. Maybe you saw that sketch when it aired last year.
What is a credit card?
It spends money. You really slide it in this machine when you buy
That's
stuff.
You hold it with your two fingers and whoop, like this. No, like that. No, like this. Whoop. No, like this.
The magic money card that goes whoop. That's Kate McKinnon teaching kids about financial concepts. Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live, not a sketch on Saturday Night Live. But Jessica, I know there are plenty of parents who are looking for resources, including Karen. Karen tweeted, any financial literacy apps out there that you'd recommend for teens or young adults and their parents?
Oh, great question. I'm not really in the business of pitching specific products to be used. Again, I would kind of go back to the fact that I think one of the most accessible things on our website for kids and parents to do together is to visit the interactive library. And somebody mentioned credit scores. There's a credit score calculator on there. Again, I think playing something like Payback, if you are the parent of a child that is going to attend some sort of college right after high school, I think that's invaluable and can be played many, many times between parents and students and or parents and their kids and get really good conversations generating. And that's kind of the important thing. It's not about the parent being an expert. It's about the parent and the child really discussing these things and kind of sussing them out together.
I did want to try a little bit of Payback, but before we do, John, one more question. Mystic Warrior in Alexandria, Virginia tweets, how rare or common are these classes? Personal finance is required for Virginia high school students as it was a requirement for me in Illinois 40 years ago. John, how rare or common are these classes?
It depends where you live, right? If you live in Alabama, Missouri, Tennessee, Utah, Virginia, you have to take the equivalent of a standalone personal finance course. That'll be happening in Iowa. In many, many other states, it's embedded in a course, almost always, not an economics course. That's required for graduation. So it's somewhat common, but there's, a good, I would say, probably 60% of the state where it's really left up to local control, and the quality of what you're getting will really differ greatly from one school district to another. In NextGen Personal Finance, they did a great study that showed where personal finance isn't really mandated in a state as a standalone course. There's a human equity issue that poor districts are a lot less likely to get it. And be required to take a course in personal finance than rich districts. And what's really sad about that is based on all the data we know, personal finance knowledge is greater with rich people than poor people. So the people who are probably need it the least are getting it the most, and the people who need it the most are getting it the least.
All right, let's take a look at this game, Payback, from NextGen. It's timeforpayback.com, and it's done like a kind of a choose-your-own-adventure where there are all these different paths. Let's see. It's time to apply for college. Enter your details to find out where you'll be accepted. GPA. My GPA was a 3.4. Extracurriculars. High, medium, or low? Medium. Home state. I'm from Florida. Okay. Apply. Let's see. You've received 4 decision letters. Where will you go? So it gives me the option of an in-state public school, an out-of-state public school, a private school, or a community college. It's telling me how prestigious the school is, how much it'll cost, and how much aid they're offering. Wow, this varies a lot. Community college only costs $8,500, but it only gives me $100 in aid. The private school costs $63,000, but it's giving me like $48,000 in aid. Jessica, while I'm thinking this through, give me a sense of what this game is and what you're trying to get young people to do. I'm trying to make my decision.
Yeah, so he's going to make his decision on where to go, and then he's going to be hit with a whole bunch of decisions that you would make from when you enter as a freshman through your senior year. And as he makes those decisions, the game is going to keep track of 4 different things. What is his debt level? But again, if the game is just minimize your debt, then you would make a bunch of unrealistic decisions that you wouldn't make in real life just to keep your debt low.
Right. And I'm working my way through the game now as we speak. I'm trying to make my decision.
Yeah. And so it's going to keep track of his debt level, but also his happiness, his connections that he's making. So that's things like, is he joining clubs or sports or things like that? And it also keeps track of his focus. How is he doing in his classes? And these metrics are all, Joshua, did you get to any decisions?
I'm getting there. I chose the in-state public school. So I'm going to be a Florida Rocket. I love that mascot. You'll be saving a ton of money on tuition and you're still close enough to come home on the weekends. Not too bad. All right, continue. Let's see. It's your first week after graduation, and the old lady down the street just offered you $50 to mow her lawn. Want to do it? No or yes? Yes. Why not? Let's see. You struggle for 2 hours with her ancient lawnmower and do a great job. Then, when you go to deposit the check she wrote, it bounces?
What?
What? This is... Okay. When you get to college, you'll have to eat. Choose your meal plan. Extra hungry for $1,000, the standard for $0, or eat like a bird for -$1,000. I'm a college student, so I don't want to be hungry all the time. Let's choose the standard. You'll have plenty to eat with this meal plan, but remember, it won't cover smoothies, coffee, or late-night pizza. So, Jessica, I'm not seeing any, like, right answer, wrong answer in this choose-your-own-adventure. It's telling me kind of what the consequences of my choices are, but I'm not getting feedback of, like, you did the right thing.
Right, exactly. And probably with that meal plan option, he chose the standard one. So his debt sort of went up a little bit, but he probably kept his happiness pretty good because he's eating decently. And as you make more and more decisions and they become sort of, you know, do you work during the summer or do you take this unpaid internship that's going to get you really great access to the career that you eventually want? And that's the kind of thing where this unpaid thing is going to increase your debt because somehow you need to live that summer that you're not getting paid. But it's going to increase your connections, and you've done all this networking. And so, yeah, the idea is like this is the real world, and that's kind of our vision for how personal finance should be taught. It is not solely about that number.
I know we're low on time, but John and Laura, I want to give you a chance to chime in for educators who are just trying to find their first steps in digging deeper into personal finance. What would you recommend for them, John? First steps. What would you recommend?
I would recommend they look for resources and educational opportunities. Get trained. Look for what training opportunities exist. I know we do some training. We actually have a graduate degree course that we offer in Vermont NextGen, I know they go around the country and they do absolutely great training. Mm-hmm. The training that Jumpstart provides is great as well. So get trained, look for free curriculum. You can do that. You don't have to pay for this.
Right.
It's free.
And
get
Laura,
free curriculum, get trained.
Laura, before we go.
A lot of this can be found on the Jumpstart Clearinghouse, the resources, and as John mentioned, all of our organizations and many others are doing training, a lot of it for free for teachers.
Laura Levine, President and CEO of the Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy. John Pelletier, Director and Founder of the Center for Financial Literacy at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont. And Jessica Endlich, the Co-Founder and Chief Operating Officer of NextGen Personal Finance. Jessica, John, Laura, thank you all for being with us. This conversation was produced by Bianca Martin. To learn more about her and the rest of our team, visit theoneA.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for investing your time with us. This is 1A.